Support for today's show comes from Squarespace. And we don't know how you are doing right now, but whatever you are doing, maybe a website is a good way to share it with people. Maybe you're taking interesting pictures of your neighborhood around you. Maybe you're writing very interesting things. Maybe you just want to have a shingle online because it is the year 2020 and the internet is how things are done. Whatever makes sense for you, Squarespace's easy-to-use templates can help. So head to squarespace.com/cracked for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code cracked to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/cracked, offer code cracked. Hey there, folks. Welcome to another episode of the Cracked Podcast, the podcast all about why being alive is more interesting than people think it is. My name is Alex Schmidt. I'm also known as Schmitty the Clam. I'm also known as Schmitty the Champ. And I am also thrilled about this week's guest. I don't know if you've heard the Creature Feature podcast. You gotta listen to Creature Feature. It is hosted by the one and only Katie Golden, an amazing podcaster and comedy writer and more. Because not only is she writing the @ProBirdWrites Twitter account, which is the funniest thing on the internet, and writing many other comedy things, she's also my favorite podcaster when it comes to knowing the amazing and surprising world of animals in a way that is funny and relatable and great. And so she's the perfect guest for a very specific lens on the world that I'm excited for us to do today. Our topic is bizarre myths and amazing facts about animals and coronavirus. One more time, that is bizarre myths and amazing facts about animals and coronavirus. Because we are in a weird situation where animals are front and center in the global human disease pandemic. Animals keep coming up in stories about it. Everything from like heartwarming little social media memes to very aggressive statements that one particular animal is responsible for the whole thing to all sorts of other geopolitical issues where people claim that one country's practices involving animals are somehow bad, even though they are pretty normal if you look at the wider world. Today we're digging into the actual facts of bats, tigers, house cats, and all sorts of other animals that you have heard about in relation to this. Because in general, I don't know if you've heard the past 3 weeks of the show. I hope you have, because we've kept it going despite, everybody being home. But we are a show where I am not a journalist or a doctor, and the rest of the people writing for Cracked are super not that. We're also a show that wants to be factual and interesting and bring you something you did not know about the world before. And so on recent episodes, we've looked at major events and social practices that have stopped and maybe needed to stop in the first place. We've looked at how one announcer and the team around him sort of reinvented how sports can work in a world where, at least in the United States, they are not being played. And last week with Jason Pargin, we looked at a lot of ways that pop culture and general social beliefs have contributed to how we have reacted to the virus and how we can keep reacting to it. If and when we do episodes about the coronavirus and what's going on, we're trying to find something specifically suited to what we do, really what I do. And that's something that I am excited about us doing. And this lens on it through the animal world with the absolute funniest best person talking about animals is something I'm excited that we can do. And we got a lot to talk about, so let's get to it. Please sit back or sit and listen to my buddy Watson, my cat, because I'm bringing him back for this one because it's an animal show. Here he is. Yeah, wasn't that great? And here's this episode of the Cracked Podcast with Katie Golden. I'll be back after we wrap up, and I pet Watson a bunch. Talk to you then. I'm so surprised that a pandemic like this can happen, and it can be so animal-centric. Like, you cover animals on your podcast all the time.
I do.
Did you ever expect that there would be, like, a disaster like this and also somehow a bunch of different animal species are involved?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I think that the pandemic both is kind of a shocking reminder how interconnected all humans are, like how we, all our actions and all our, like, our health individually impacts everyone else on the planet, which is crazy to think about. And also all animals' health and their, what's going on with them impacts every other animal, including us on the planet. And I think that it's terrible that the pandemic is going on. We shouldn't have to find out about, you know, have this reminder of like how connected we are by such a tragic thing happening. But it is a very visceral reminder of how interconnected everything is. Not to sound like a hippie, but it's like just scientifically true.
You're basically saying like the ecosystem is all interconnected. And then in the back of all our heads, when we say something like that, we're like, God, I'm such a flower child right now. Oh, foolish. But no, that's how it works.
It's literally scientifically how it works.
Linda, we got a lot of stories here about animals. And then the first one to get into is a myth. It's a thing that is not true and is fake going on.
Yes.
And I think I found out about it through a funny tweet you did making fun of it.
Yes.
Because the tweet you did, the whole caption was just, nature is returning. We are the virus.
Yeah. It's a picture of a pineapple sitting sort of forlornly outside on this walkway. It's actually a pineapple that's sitting outside of my neighbor's apartment, which, and here's the thing, if I may drag my neighbors on, you know, I would say international podcasting, they leave out a variety of very interesting things on their porch. Once it was like a raw chicken cutlet, you know, like trash bags are sort of the, you know, blah, 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 you should put away your trash. But it is fun sometimes to see like things that they leave out. This time they left out an entire pineapple, just kind of abandoned it outside. So I took a picture of it and said, you know, nature is returning, we are the virus, you know, as a kind of goof. To imply that the pineapple is the, you know, the wildlife returning. But it's based on these viral tweets that show like a picture of an animal, like maybe a swan in a canal or a dolphin somewhere, and saying, nature is returning, we are the virus. You know, this idea that now that we're all inside, that nature has made its triumphant return and we only needed to stay inside for like a month for nature to recover, and like humans are a blight upon the planet. And I covered this on a Creature Feature. It's the animals are up to something. And I talked a little bit about these myths about nature returning, and also just the, I think there's an overall harmful message about sort of this misanthropic thing of like human beings are terrible and they're a blight on the planet. And I think the issue is a lot more complicated than that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm glad we were talking about flower child stuff before, because that belief that humans are somehow just completely separate and completely negative to the entire rest of the ecosystem is like fine, but dumb, I think. Like it's not really how anything works.
It is true. We have caused a lot of problems for the environment, especially in the last like 70 years. And it is a big problem, but to say that humans are just bad for the environment, to flatten it to that, I think it's like it's both really misanthropic, and it also kind of absolves a lot of the guilty parties of responsibility for things. Because like if it's just all people, like all humans are bad, you know, we caused all these problems, and like a pandemic is good because it hurts people. I think like that it's like, well, no, actually we've seen the increase in emissions and the increase in carbon emissions and pollution and decrease in air quality. These are things that you can attribute to like an increase in industry and car traffic and plane traffic and boat traffic and all these things. And it's like, well, we can actually still have humans, but also reduce some of these activities. You know, it's not like, you know, it's not like forcing a grandma inside her home and she's scared of getting sick. Like, oh, cool, that's how we solve the problem. It's like, no, I mean, there are other things that we can do to save the planet. I don't think I've seen a single serious scientist or evolutionary biologist happy about this pandemic.
Right. They're not like, at last, with everyone staying inside watching Netflix, the world's just better. Like,
right.
No, like we could all be outside, too, if we were just more thoughtful about our environmental impact and our footprint. And yeah, sure.
Exactly. Yeah.
Any like humans are the virus is like very spooky villain with a space laser to me. Like, I don't want people wiped out or something. That's crazy.
Yeah, I think it's because it's ignoring a big problem, which is that the people who are primarily impacted by something like a pandemic are not the rich people who are like the head of companies that have actually have the power to like significantly change environmental practices, industrial practices, like very, like those people typically are going to be fine. You know, like it's obviously the virus doesn't necessarily spare the wealthy, but having a lot of money and access to medicine and being able to isolate and not having to go to a service job, that makes you a lot less at risk. While the people who are most at risk of getting it and suffering from it are people who, you know, are lower on the socioeconomic ladder, and they are perhaps the least responsible for environmental problems. So to say like, oh great, now we got this pandemic, that'll really stick it to us humans, it's like, no, it's actually gonna stick it to, you know, little ladies, you know, our grandparents who are, you know, sweet and, you know, just like, and also just people who have to go serve us groceries and nurses and doctors who are getting sick at really high rates because of the exposure. And it's like, that's not, you know, to say like, oh, you know, this is a real dramatic irony, like a real nature sticking it to us, is just so, I guess, ignorant of how the people who are getting most impacted by it bear the least responsibility for environmental destruction.
Yeah. I noticed that many of the things you just said would not be easy to fit into a tweet with a fun picture of an animal on it.
Yeah.
So that's pretty frustrating from a social media success perspective.
That's kind of my bad.
So maybe we'll work on that. But
yeah, it's kind of my bad. I didn't make it clickable content, unfortunately.
The clickable content we've got here, basically, I feel like this myth is wrong in two ways, because one, no, nature is not like somehow suddenly flourishing just because mostly the same number of us are sheltering. But also it's a lot of tweets where people are just taking a picture or video of animals in an urban setting and claiming it's some sort of big change when it's not even from this current time or from the place they're saying or anything. And we've got a bunch of examples that we'll link to because this is like the most made up nonsense on the internet about this pandemic, maybe. It's very, very exciting to break down.
Yeah. My favorite one is the swans one, I think. It's just like, so there's this tweet about like, and it's got like something insane, like a million likes, right?
This tweet is from @iCaveri, and it's pictures of swans and also a fish. And the tweet is, quote, "Here's an unexpected side effect of the pandemic. The waters flowing through the canals of Venice is clear for the first time in forever. The fish are visible. The swans returned."
The beautiful,
and it's over a million likes and hundreds of thousands of retweets.
The beautiful, gentle swans have returned. I mean, I don't know if you want to talk about it, but like, it's not true.
Yeah, the swan picture is from a place called Burano, which is like distant from Venice pretty far. It's in the general area, but it's not there. And there are apparently always fish in the canals, just there's a little bit less boat traffic and you can see them better now. But also scientists that have been talked to about it said that the water is not actually cleaner, it's just clearer visually.
Yeah. I mean, if anyone owns a fish tank, you'll know this, where like when you like sort of stir up the fish tank or like disturb like the bottom of this fish tank, all the silt comes up and the water looks really dirty, and then the water settles back down and it looks clean again. That's what's happening here. So there's a bunch of silt and stuff at the bottom of the water. Boat traffic usually stirs that up, makes the water look opaque and dirty. And now that there's no boat traffic, the silt has sunk to the bottom and the water looks clearer, although it is not actually cleaner. It's just that things have been able to settle to the bottom. So you can see the fish, that's true. But the swans, the idea, and I talked about this on my podcast a little bit, but the idea that swans are at all intimidated by people and boat traffic is kind of funny, because swans are very, I would say, assertive animals, very assertive.
No, put them on blast. Put them on blast.
They're very aggressive. Yeah, they've drowned a guy before, just like by the swan. A territorial swan was defending its nesting site, and there was this poor guy on a boat, a little rowboat, and the swan capsized the boat. And it's hard to say, because I don't think anyone witnessed it. They kind of pieced it together that the swan like harassed him and he couldn't swim to shore and he unfortunately drowned. But it's just, yeah, I love swans. I think swans are beautiful. I think they're really cool how they sway their neck and chase you around and terrify you. But they are a regular feature of this area in Venice. And could there be like more of them right now and like they're less disturbed because of the lack of boat traffic? Sure, but they haven't like made a glorious return. They're still there, and like probably now they're gaining confidence for the revolution that is about, the very bloody revolution that's about to happen. Yeah.
Yeah, they can fight us on land, in the sea, mm-hmm. in the air. Mm-hmm. They're terrifying.
They are, yeah.
And this tweet again, it's from @iCaveri. And kind of in their defense, their name on Twitter, they have an Indian flag emoji in it. But that's leading to National Geographic got a hold of this person who got over 1 million likes, saying that somehow this has brought nature into the canals, which, why do you even need it? They're canals. Like, they aren't natural areas. But National Geographic got a hold of this person and found out that they made it up and are, like, proud of it. The person's name is Kaveri Ganapathy Ahuja. They live in New Delhi, India, and were not in Venice. They just saw some photos on social media and then decided to post them and make that claim.
Yeah.
And that's kind of it. And they said, quote, "The tweet was just about sharing something that brought me joy in these gloomy times. I wish there was an edit option on Twitter just for moments like this."
Yeah.
End quote. But then also they said they are not going to delete it or take it back. She's tweeted about the unprecedented number of likes and retweets she's received on the tweet. Quote, "It's a personal record for me, and I would not like to delete it."
I mean, in her defense, if I got 1 million likes on a tweet, if I like tweeted a photo of a sandwich and I'm like, "This sandwich cures cancer," and I got 1 million likes, I probably wouldn't delete it either, because that's 1 million likes.
Yeah, that translates into so many.
Right.
$0.
I think $0, but, you know, Twitter dollars, which makes, you know, for my ego, but like, you kind of get to see like why misinformation spreads, because outrageous claims get a lot of attention, and it is not in the best interests of the, you know, whether it's a random person on Twitter or, you know, a news site or some kind of media, especially when it comes to scientific claims or natural claims, where it's like science journalism often is tricky because, like, if the person writing up the story doesn't understand the science or doesn't understand the biology of the thing, they're probably going to make a mistake, but they're also probably going to try to make the claim sound as outrageous as possible for the clicks and the views. And, you know, that's how we got the infamous swans tweet, and now everyone's going to think swans are great, and then that's just going to let them sneak up on us as they stage a bloody coup. So here we are.
I was not totally prepared for the let's fight misinformation and declare the war on the swans that is coming.
Well,
I'm into it. This is great.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying let's declare a war on the swans. I'm saying prepare to surrender to the swans. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Right. It's already over.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, there's also another tweet here from Luca Santis, and it has tens of thousands of likes and a lot of shares, where he claims that there are dolphins in the canals of Venice and posts a video, and the video is from Sardinia, which is a separate place, and I guess it happens there pretty often. And so just everyone on Twitter apparently has said, like, oh, there's a global pandemic going. It's my time to pretend a species is in the canals of Venice now. It's a really weird goal?
Yeah.
I don't understand it, other than the, you know, wanting to be famous. I guess those stories boil down to, like, instead of thinking about humans are struggling, you can think about, like, panda is happy, or whatever the
panda's
animal is.
Panda's getting like, it on. Panda's finally getting some. Dry spell over for pandas. That's actually true. There's a panda.
That actually was a story, yeah.
Yeah, like, pandas at the Ocean Park Zoo in Hong Kong, I think, did mate naturally for the first time in many years, and that's cool. But I mean, it's like, I like how you know, pandas are very finicky when it comes to sex. They only are receptive to mating like a short period of time every year. Males are really bad at reading body language, so it leads to a lot of trouble mating. And so I guess just like the pandemic like really put them in the mood.
some events are just kind of happening and there's a pandemic too. Like, yeah. I feel like maybe just it worked out for those pandas kind of now and that's it.
I mean, it could be that they had more privacy because there's no park visitors, but it's also panda mating season, so it could just have been a coincidence. It's hard to say. Maybe they're just really turned on by the threat of a pandemic. It's like they're like disaster preppers, and they finally, like, it's like we've been disaster prepping. Oh man, baby, you're so sexy. I love your little bandit mask, you know?
Like a prepper panda with like big cans of bamboo in the ground, you know? There's more memes here of, oh, nature's doing great. And this is, it's a weird story because as far as I can tell, the person who tweeted it just made up the entire thing. Like,
oh,
they
really?
Just made, invented all of it. Like, they took these pictures and then just went for it. This
sure.
user is @spilling_the_t, just the letter T.
Blast
and they tweeted,
blast him, Alex.
Oh, they're getting blasted. And they tweeted, quote, while humans carry out social distancing, a group of 14 elephants broke into a village in Yunnan province looking for corn and other food. They ended up drinking 30 kilograms of corn wine and got so drunk that they fell asleep in a nearby tea garden. And then it's one picture of the elephants in a field and another picture of just two elephants laying down between mm-hmm. some plants. And then the actual situation is the photos are from June of 2019, credited to the Yunnan Province Elephant Management Bureau. Mm. And then there's a whole Yunnan Province Elephant Management Bureau because elephants are just sort of constantly raiding fields in this area. It's just like what's going on in that part of Asia all the time.
Right.
And they're just like eating things and doing things. And as far as I can tell, this Twitter user just invented like a bedtime story around
it. Well, elephants really are sort of just like your sort of unstoppable juggernaut roommate who raids your kitchen and there's not a thing you can do about it. You're like, hey, you know, that was my marinara sauce that you're using. Could you not? And, but they are an elephant. So it's like, well, actually, I can do this. So... But also, it looks like in this photo, the elephants that are lying down, I don't even know if they're sleeping. They could just be rolling around in the dirt because they love doing that. Like, they love rolling around in the dirt, which probably isn't great if you're the owner of this tea crop because, you know, when an elephant rolls around on a tea plant, probably not good for the plant. But, you know, the elephants are having fun, so that's cool.
Because also, like, this tweet got over 250,000 retweets, so it's been seen a lot. But also, it's like it's two very cute pictures of elephants doing stuff.
Yeah,
like you can just share that with people and tell them what happened. Like, you don't need to be like, coronavirus turned these elephants into like the guys from Animal House at a farm.
Yeah.
Like, it's really weird.
Well, yeah, and I think I read a study that found like if you give someone a positive story and then later they find out it's not true, it makes them feel more negative than they would have if they never heard the story at all. So I don't think it's good to just lie to people to make them happy. I know that's a controversial opinion, but I think, and
first
also,
you're anti-swan, then you're anti-lying. Oh boy.
I know, right? Again, not anti-swan, just a realist. A realist about the swan revolution. But you know, like with my podcast where we talk about animals, I'm sure like occasionally, I mean, very occasionally, I might make a mistake and say something wrong. But it's like I really try to get all the facts right about animals. I'm also like always happy when someone like corrects me. They're often really apologetic. They'll like write to me and be like, oh, I'm so sorry. I don't want to be that person that corrects you. It's like, no, like this is like important to get the facts right on things, because I think that, you know, the truth about animals is so interesting. There's no need to lie about their behavior. Like, you can't, like, the human imagination, I don't think, is good enough to outsmart Mother Nature. Animals are completely, they're just so interesting. I mean, like, if you want stories about animals getting drunk, there are plenty. Like, animals do get drunk. Birds, especially in like the colder parts of North America, will eat berries that have frozen in the winter, and they actually ferment, and the birds get drunk and crash into things. And so,
awesome.
So much so that there are bird rescue groups that basically have bird drunk tanks where they collect drunk birds and let them sleep it off until they're sober enough to go back out without crashing into things.
Yeah, that's amazing. We should just go tweet that later.
Right.
And not do any fake coronavirus right. version of it. Not like, with everyone at home, the birds are drinking Old English malt liquor. Like, no, you don't need to do that. Just like tell them the true crazy thing about the berries.
With everyone staying home, the birds are getting crunk. We're the virus.
Before we go on to the next thing, there's one other kind of fake nature has returned thing. This is a video taken by Alfonso Lopez Tena, who is a politician in the Barcelona area, because he saw boars descending from the mountains and running through the town of Barcelona.
Finally.
And I can't tell if the video is, like, recent. It is very light traffic there where he took it. But the weird thing is, and we'll in particular point people to the Some News show by Cody Johnston and team. It's great.
Yeah, I write for Some News sometimes, yeah.
Yeah,
I
and for Lucky Golden.
It's great.
And you guys found that there are just kind of loose boars all of the time in human situations, and have an amazing video about just boars constantly showing up places, which is very exciting. And then we'll have linked, like this guy has a video of boars running through Barcelona, but if you just Google search boars Barcelona without any coronavirus terms, there's a lot of stories. Like, they're just constantly trouble.
Yeah, I gotta shout out David Bell, because I think he's more on the boars beat than I am. But yes, absolutely. Boars just kind of are, I think. They just are, and sometimes they exist in our communities, and that's just something we have to sort of accept, because sometimes they will come down and run around. I mean, there's like a video. Oh, I don't remember where it was taken, but I think it's a peccary just running at maximum speed, like a Terminator, in a neighborhood, I think somewhere in South America. But
I've seen that.
Yeah, it's like, it's oddly terrifying. And I like peccaries and I like boars, but seeing that peccary like running just Terminator speed, I'm like, who's he going to kill? Like, he was sent back maybe from like the future where, and now he's like got to kill some past, you know, peccary that like is going to invent robot peccaries. I don't know.
I'll be peck is probably what he would say. I don't know.
Yeah, I think so.
Terminator pigs. It's
Terminator pigs, yeah.
And what you were saying earlier, Katie, about like needing to be right about animals, because why be wrong about it, is really great. And I think one of the primary things to talk about with this virus is that people know the accurate thing that it is a zoonotic virus. Zoonotic means it can go between animals and people. So there's the true thing that maybe this virus came from an animal to a person in some way at some point, and that contributed to the epidemic. But also there's a lot of myths out there about us knowing anything about exactly how that happened, and in particular being like afraid of bats.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen that like meme, or even that idea joked about on Twitter, where like, somebody ate a bat and there you go.
Mm.
And we need to let people know that no one actually knows that. That's
right.
Just sort of a thing people think might have happened.
It's also, I think, important to note that that's whenever jokes like that are made, there's also that undercurrent, or maybe even overcurrent, of racism and xenophobia. It's just because like these weird people in a different country ate animals that we don't eat, and therefore is strange and wrong. So first of all, it's untrue. We have no evidence. In fact, like the evidence points that this is not the case, that it didn't like jump from bat to human, but it's just all the viruses that come from pigs and like pig farms. And we don't shame people for eating pork and go like, see, like H1N1, this is your fault for eating pork, like a bunch of weirdos.
Right. We should talk about that stuff, because when you mentioned undercurrent or maybe overcurrent, we've got a pretty prominent overcurrent of just racism coming out of that bat belief.
Yeah.
United States Senator John Cornyn, a Republican from Texas, he has said many times that it's basically the fault of Chinese cultural practices.
Okay.
He said it was, quote, no coincidence that illnesses like the novel coronavirus originate in China. And he claimed it was because of, quote, some of the cultural practices there. And then he was interviewed again later because people were like, you're just being explicitly racist, right? Are you sure you want to do that? And he told
yes,
the interviewer
I do.
That I wish they'd asked it to him that way. But he told the interviewer that, yes, coronavirus and the swine flu pandemic and Middle East respiratory syndrome are all because of China and how they eat.
Interesting.
And he said, quote, people eat bats and snakes and dogs and things like that. These viruses are transmitted from the animal to the people, and that's why China has been the source of a lot of these viruses, end quote. There's all kinds of ways that's made up, and one of them is that the swine flu probably originated in the United States, and Middle East respiratory syndrome probably originated in the country of Jordan.
Yeah.
And then there's all the other ways it's bullshit, but that's one of many.
Again, it's like, you know, we eat various animals in the U.S., and to say like, oh, well, you eat different animals, that's weird and more dangerous than the animals we eat, it's typically wrong. It's typically like, I mean, like, it's true that you can have with wild animals, you can definitely get zoonotic diseases from them when you are sort of like trafficking them. So that there's a certain element of truth in terms of like when we are encroaching on natural habitats, it increases the chance of zoonotic viruses. But that's not any particular country doing that alone. Like, we're all doing that in terms of like habitat destruction. And also, like, again, like you mentioned, swine flu, like with domesticated farm animals, there's always a chance of a disease originating in like a farm pig and jumping to humans, as it has a few times. And the, you know, swine flu originates from domesticated pigs. The 2009 H1N1 pandemic probably came from somewhere in on the American continent, either in the US or Mexico. But we didn't like shame people for eating pigs. Like, if we were morally consistent, we would be like, oh, see, you goofy, like, people eating pigs, like, you're so weird and you caused this virus.
Yeah, John Cornyn probably said all that stuff and then ate a hot dog, you know, like, he's the worst.
Yeah.
Once again, support for today's show comes from Squarespace, and I don't know if you have used their service before. It is a great way to build a website. It's very, very simple. It's very easy to use. It lets you lay out just about anything you're trying to do with the click of a few buttons and a few drags. And it's like playing with blocks as a child, but you get a whole website out of it. And it's also more advanced than blocks. I shouldn't call it that. But you get it. The fun is what I'm after in the metaphor. Also, I think I used the word like in that metaphor, so it is actually a simile, not a metaphor. Thank you, grade school grammar lessons, for helping me catch that in my brain. With beautiful templates created by world-class designers and the ability to customize just about anything with a few clicks, you can easily make a beautiful website yourself, like I said. Because Squarespace empowers millions of people, from designers to lawyers, artists to gamers, even restaurants and gyms, to turn great ideas into something real. So head to squarespace.com/cracked for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code cracked to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/cracked, offer code cracked. Again, this is a relatively new virus, the novel coronavirus.
Mm-hmm.
But from what people can tell, a lot of animals can carry it. No one knows if a bat brought it to a human. There was also a meme going around online where there was a video being shared that showed a young Chinese woman eating bat soup. And the Daily Mail and Russia Today and a lot of conservative Twitter claimed that it was a video shot recently and shot in Wuhan. So, and they were like, oh, it's a video of it starting. But the video turned out to have been shot in 2016. It was a video of an internet celebrity named Wang Mengyun, who is the host of an online travel show and was eating the bat soup in Palau, which is a Pacific island more than 2,000 miles from Wuhan, and 4 years ago.
What you're saying is lies? That someone lied to me about something on the internet?
And it's like, I can see how people get fooled and share a thing. Maybe I'm just dumb. I don't understand how people online are like creating these. Like, they're just seeing a piece of media and fully making up a connection to current events and pretending it's from now. It's the craziest thing to me.
Well, you know, because they're liars, Alex.
Oh, I am dumb. Yes. as you said, Katie, it probably didn't come straight from a bat if it did either. Like people are trying to figure out exactly how it's transmitted. And one theory is that there was some sort of in-between species, potentially a pangolin being trafficked. That's like a theory of how it got to us. And again, no one has any actual idea or knowledge or proof. No one knows.
Right. I guess like this is another one of those things where people like to post this like, gotcha kind of thing, like where people are saying that this is like an ironic punishment for trafficking pangolins. And it's like, well, you know, yeah, like trafficking pangolins is probably not great. Like poaching animals, I'm not a fan of it personally. I know, hot take, I'm not a fan of poaching animals. But I think there's something really gross about saying like this pandemic that kills so many people that we deserve it, or, you know, like it's some ironic punishment because, you know, poaching is not great. I mean, there's a lot of bad practices we do as people, and to also it kind of like puts all of the responsibility for our bad behaviors in terms of the environment on like other countries, where it's like, oh, see, like this poaching happens over here and like they're the cause of all the problems. Yeah. It's like, yeah, no, we're like the US is often one of the biggest like emitters of fossil fuels and then carbon, and like it's not, you know, we're not like an innocent little country going like, oh guys, stop it, like you're destroying the environment, stop it.
Every time there's an earthquake or a hurricane or something like that, somehow the internet finds some like evangelical Christian broadcaster to say that it's gay people's fault. And like it's like one of those kind of things, like, right. No, this is just a disaster, and then there were also some practices, and being gay is what people are, it's fine.
I think what's so frustrating is in all this racism and xenophobia is lost this idea, which is that like there was a Stanford University study that found that forest loss and human encroachment on animal habitats actually does make it more likely that a virus will jump from animal to human. So if we think that, like, you know, once we deal with corona, like, we're good, like, no, this is, we gotta fix our stuff now because the threat of another zoonotic pandemic is always there, I'm sorry to say. Every time we deal with it, hopefully we'll get a little better at it. I mean, there's a lot of potential ideas of how to be better prepared for the next pandemic that I hope we take, but, you know, so I think if we could, like, instead of just being racist and xenophobic and, like, look at a video of a woman eating a type of soup and being like, oh, that's a weird type of soup that I wouldn't eat, and therefore it's this lady's fault that we're all suffering. You know, instead of doing that and lying, you know, being a liar, that's not good either. If we could think like, okay, well, zoonotic viruses are a big threat to humanity. Let's look at what studies are saying about how to prevent zoonotic viruses. And one of them is to decrease habitat destruction. And that's something a lot of countries, including the US, are guilty, even if we don't directly like say like, oh, well, we're not cutting down forests in our own countries. It's like, yeah, well, okay, but our industry is profiting from that practice. So we can't just like pass the buck on to like, this is this country's fault, and, you know, we don't have to change our behavior at all as a country because we're all the way over here. It's like, no, that's not how it works. We're all interconnected, right, man?
Yeah. This version would be like, well, our country is the virus, nothing we could do to change it. Like, no, you could just cut down less trees and you know, reuse things better and think about it a little bit. It's actually actionable.
And when I say we, I hope people realize I'm not talking about you and me, Alex, or, you know, you random particular listener. Hi there. I don't blame you at all. I mean, obviously, it's good to recycle and not drive when you don't have to, and carpool and all. It's great when people all like come together as individuals and try to help save the environment. But like when it comes to the heavy lifting on things like habitat destruction and lowering sort of the output of industry and stuff, it's hard for us as individuals to like be directly like, you know, march up to a big factory and be like, hey, stop it. you know, like we can, I think voting and political activism and consumption habits, all of that helps. But again, it's like, it's a little weird to be like, we're all equally responsible. It's like, are we all equally responsible?
There's one other weird bat story where we also need to take care of North American bats.
Yes, we do.
Because starting last year, there was an epidemic of a new disease, which is the white nose syndrome fungal epidemic, and tons of North American bats are dying off from it. And so some people are concerned that, like, if the public is afraid of bats, they will, like, start killing off the last ones and it'll get worse.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very concerning. Again, I think to say, like, oh, a pandemic is good for nature is really oversimplifying things. It's zoonotic. It can jump from humans to animals and vice versa. That's never good. That's not a good thing.
Yeah.
We don't know if it can jump from humans to bats yet. You know, I'm not a doctor or an epidemiologist, so I'm probably oversimplifying this, so I'm sorry. But, like, a virus like coronavirus, basically, you know, all those, like, spikes that you see, like, it's a ball, it's a spiky ball. Each of those spikes is a surface protein. And in order to attack a person's body, like, one of those surface protein basically fits into a surface receptor on a living cell. So, like, it could be a human cell, it could be an animal cell. And if that little prong that's coming out of the virus, that surface protein, like, can fit into that surface receptor, it gains access into the cell and can take over and reproduce, and then that's what makes us sick. So in order for it to jump from an animal to a human or a human to an animal, most mutations with a virus are going to be bad. It's going to be bad for the virus, but some of them, if it, like, because there's so many of the viruses replicating at such a high rate and there's so many of them, once in a blue moon, it's going to be a good mutation that allows it to jump from, like, that surface protein is going to change just enough that it actually fits like a key into a lock into the cell of a different animal. And then that's bad. So, <Yeah. laughs> and then that's why it's not like those surface proteins. It's not like a skeleton key. It can't, like, unlock any cell. It basically has to mutate until it hits the lucky mutation where it can jump from one animal to another. So that's why it's not just infecting every animal and going back and forth right now, because it can't do that. But once it gets like that lucky mutation, for not lucky for us, but lucky for the virus, then it can infect a different animal. And that's not good.
Like you said, we don't know that humans can pass it to North American bats, but since it was first discovered in New York 12 years ago, the white nose syndrome fungus has swept across 38 states and killed legions of bats, according to the Los Angeles Times. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service told scientists to suspend all bat studies during the pandemic because they just don't know if this already really, really struggling species can catch it from us.
Right.
Spooky.
Which is, again, like, not great, because those studies are good for the bat populations because we're trying to figure out how to save them. But then, like, we don't want to infect them. And again, it's like a very complicated issue that's like, you know, saying like, oh, nature just hit the reset button, which is like one of these tweets said. It's like, no, man, it really didn't. You know, this is not a good thing.
Yeah, a lot of people can't go to work right now, and some of them have full-time jobs helping animals.
Right, right. The relationship between humans and animals is complicated, and shutting everything down suddenly for some amount of time is not, like, unilaterally just good for the environment. It's, like, in some ways, like, obviously the reduced traffic and the reduced, like, pollution is, like, yeah, that's great, but a lot of other stuff isn't good, and, you know, think about it. Think about it.
There's also more stories here with the virus going between animals. And I think maybe the most famous ones now, besides bad stuff, is that tigers can catch the coronavirus.
Yeah.
And also house cats can catch it.
Yeah.
But I think not everybody understands that it's mostly a thing where the cats catch it from humans and not a thing where they're going to, like, all go out and give it to us.
Yeah. It's like I said earlier with the virus mutating those surface proteins so that it can fit into the surface receptors of cells. Just because it can jump one way doesn't mean it can jump the other way. So, like, it mutated apparently in this way where it can actually fit, kind of lock onto a cat cell, but then that doesn't mean that can then go back and fit onto a human cell once it's like in the cat body. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
It's also, it depends on like being able to be transmissible. So if cats can essentially like, if their symptoms make it transmissible, if they're like sneezing and coughing in a way that those particles get into a human. And that's another way that it's hard for a virus to transfer from one animal to a different species of animal, because then that vector of transmission might not work, like might literally not be able to reach the other animal.
Yeah, most of the time my pet cat is not coughing into my face. He's way down on the floor there, you know?
Yeah.
Nice try.
Nice try, short stuff.
And we've got a couple stories here. It's April 6th, a Bronx Zoo tiger tested positive for the virus, a four-year-old Malayan tiger named Nadia. They believe that she probably caught it from a keeper that had it, like
right.
A human. And then New York Times, April 22nd, reported that two house cats in the U.S. in different parts of New York State both showed mild symptoms of coronavirus, but are expected to be fine. And the Agriculture Department and the CDC emphasized that there is no evidence that pets play a role in spreading the virus in the United States. They said in the story that tests for pets are not the same as those for people.
Right.
So also, if you read a story about like they tested a cat, you don't need to be mad. Like should have gone to a hospital worker.
Right.
Like, no, they're just separate boxes of stuff. It's different.
It's just like through one of these drive-through testing sites, there's like a cat driving a car, and it's like, oh, I guess we got to give you a test, sir. Wait a minute.
Obviously, there has been very little testing of cats.
Yeah.
I don't think I need to say that.
Yeah.
But it's unclear whether this disease is threatening to cats or not, right? Like they might feel sick, but no one's sure on evidence yet as far as like you needing to be worried about giving it to your pet. Like your pet's already being socially distant unless it's some really aggressive outdoor cat. And so, you know, it's probably going to be as fine as you are, and that's okay.
The advice I saw was that basically treat them like a roommate, where it's like if you're isolating with the cat, like that's fine. And then socially distance from cats and other households, or, you know what I mean? So like treat them like another person where it's like, I could, but like if you're living with your cat and you're socially isolating, you know, the cat's not going to like spontaneously get it unless, you know, you're bringing the cat to another home with other people, which you shouldn't be doing anyways.
Right. Like you're just working on stuff at your computer and then you look up and your cat is back from the beach.
Right.
Like, oh no.
Right.
Like that's not going to happen.
Mr. Blinkers. Well, I'm working on my tan.
Darn you, it looks good. Ah, proud of you. There's kind of a pair of things going on with pets in this, and I think one is way better known, because the good news is that pet adoptions are way up. There's just a lot more pets being adopted because a lot of people are home and have time. There's also a thing going on where it's much, much harder now to kind of take a stray animal and run them through the veterinary processing that's needed in order to rescue them and then put them up for adoption, because vet staffs are all like staying home or keeping limited hours and distance and so on. So sort of a weird situation for pets, where like the ones that were already in the system getting adopted all the time, really great. And then the other ones are sort of just hoping things work out for them.
I think it's really great that people are adopting animals at high rates. Before adopting an animal, it goes for any time you're about to adopt an animal, really think about it. Think if that will fit with your lifestyle. It's a commitment for, you know, many years. Like it could be up to a couple of decades that you have this animal. So you gotta really think about it. But if you've thought about it and you're like, yeah, you know what, Mr. Blinkers and I can chill, we can hang for like 15 to 20 years, like then, you know, you are, I think it's great to adopt an animal.
Relatives of mine have adopted a puppy in this time.
Aww.
And like I know other people who are adopting cats and stuff. And if people are, that's great. According to Wired, all over the country, from New York to Wisconsin and North Carolina to Colorado and New Mexico, there's a massive upswing being reported by animal shelters and adoptions. Kitty Block, the president and CEO of the Humane Society, says that rates of fostering have increased by 90% in some cities, like 90.
Wow.
And some New York City shelters are seeing application numbers at 10 times the normal rate, which is all awesome. Like, you know, that's a nice way to use your, not just your time, but also your situation, where you'll be home a lot more than usual. It's great that people are doing that. Really good.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
And then also on sort of the flip side, CNBC says that more than 30 U.S. states have issued restrictions that prohibit elective surgeries and procedures, including ones that take place in veterinary offices. And so that means that the usual vaccinations and spay and neuter programs, as well as vet checkups for anything not life-threatening, are sort of suspended at a lot of veterinary hospitals. So if somebody sort of rescues a cat or dog off the street, right now it's really hard to get like a medical professional to look at them.
Right. Now is that, I'm assuming that's because with surgeries, even though obviously you don't need to do human surgeries at a veterinary office, like often the supplies are similar. So if you have elective animal surgeries, that's impacting the supply chain for like human medical needs.
There's like sort of that element where like some of the gauze and stuff is the same.
Right.
And then I think it's also a thing where, you know, the staffs at a veterinary hospital can stay home and be socially distant unless there's like a cat with an active emergent thing. You know?
Right.
It's an interesting time. There's sort of a balance for the nation's pets.
Yeah.
And also we're all seeing our pets more often if we're home.
That's right.
That's great.
Cookie, my dog, is she's
Cookie.
She has learned that we can't leave. And this has been a game changer for her. She's like, you can't leave the house. I get attention 24/7. She's begun taking liberties. Like, she's waking us up earlier and earlier. Like, she's blocking the door now. Like, when we are getting ready to go outside, she sits in front of the door and then bites our shoes if we try to leave. Because she's like, you're not supposed to. Remember, self-quarantine. Hey, you're not supposed to leave. But she's just become so, she's so used to us staying home all the time now. I don't know how she's going to deal when the self-isolation, because she's just like, no, you're my captives now. You're my captives and you must rub my belly all day long now.
I guess we as humans have an advantage over the pets because we can like speak to each other and read news stories and stuff and like mentally prepare for this to wrap up or change, you know? And the pets, not so much.
Nah, it's just going to be a surprise. Take her by surprise. She's going
to... Yeah.
I mean, like, I do work from home a lot, so she's at least got that going for her. But, it's going to be wild for her not to get belly rubs all day long. It's going to be real tough for her.
Yeah, and then, like, in my case as a person, I'm going to have to get used to less belly rubs during the day. It's going to be a really strange change all around.
You can relate.
Let's not change it. There's also another just sort of odd institutional thing is, of course, zoos. Lots of people forget about zoos in these kind of times.
Yeah.
But zoos are obviously struggling right now because they're closed and no one can go. And a zoo is a business where you have to keep feeding all of the animals in the park all of the time. And you have
That's
to keep doing, you know, the equivalent of veterinary care all of the time. Los Angeles Times says that the LA Zoo spends $800,000 a year feeding the animals. San Diego Zoo says that at the zoo and at Safari Park, they spent about $231 million in 2018 on animal care and also employees and exhibition operations and stuff. And these zoos are just earning zero income for the year right now and in a lot of trouble. Like Brookfield Zoo, my former employer in Illinois, laid off a third of its staff this month because they just needed to do that because no one could come, like they're not allowed.
So zoos are, it's a complicated issue. It's like you have zoos ranging in quality and ethics from Tiger King to...
Right, the best kind, right?
The best kind, Tiger Kings. Exactly.
Yeah.
To the San Diego Zoo, that little podunk zoo. there are a lot of zoos that do a lot of good stuff in terms of animal education. They really try to take care of their animals well, and they also do a lot of work with like conservation groups. So I think like places like the San Diego Zoo, I'm concerned about.
I feel like the zoo animals in particular are staying in the exact same locations, doing the exact same things as always, but there's just this economic storm cloud over them going on. Like we have a really weird story here from Germany. And for one thing, KCRW Berlin says that an association of more than 50 German zoos applied to the government for 100 million euros in aid just to try to stay afloat. But also there's one zoo called the Tierpark Neumünster in northern Germany. And its director, Verena Kaspari, told the German press about a contingency plan their zoo drew up for, like, when they run out of money, which animals to feed to which other animals, as a stopgap thing. And it's, I guess, some sort of like flowchart or decision tree or something where you gradually feed the smaller animals to the larger animals until only their prized polar bear named Vitus is left.
Vitus. Only Vitus survive.
He will survive. And but they just like told the newspapers this as if it's not the craziest thing to be drawing up in your office at your job.
Sure,
what are you doing?
Vitus need more penguin. Give Vitus the penguin.
Bring him some monkeys. Like, it's a really weird day at the zoo to do that. Crazy.
I mean, if you think about it, they haven't actually gotten rid of any animals. They've just all consolidated it into one mega animal.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
I am made up of all of the other animals. I am strong because of their blood and flesh.
Right, it's the logic of the German scientist in Human Centipede, but it's just with a bunch of zoo animals.
We will make one mecha animal made of all the other animals. This is most efficient.
Yeah, and so obviously that's, I'm trying to figure out if this zoo is like trying to scare the public into donating or something, but it's a really weird... It's just
dangling like, a cute like baby impala over like this bear and being like you want to donate money, or are we gonna have to feed little nibbles here over to Vitus? Just like the animal feeding cam of like every time you donate, you know, this like little baby harp seal. Those are cute. Those are adorable. You kind of like, you have it like on a rope. And you're sort of like lowering the rope slowly towards the polar bear. But every time you get a donation, the rope gets pulled up a little more. And every time you don't get a donation, it lowers a little more. So, you know, it's like the harp seal's fate is in your hands.
German zoo's really silly and also weirdly dark. It's not a way to handle this situation at all.
Silly billies.
There's a few more stories here just about, and in the notes here, Katie, you wrote some great stuff about basically, there is no silver lining or positive to a pandemic. And then also, we've got a few stories here about weirdly specific advantages to animals in this.
Right.
One of them being that more or less birds don't have to shout or like cry out as loudly as they used to.
Yeah.
Because also, on social media and me when I take walks, people have noticed like, hey, I think I'm noticing birdsong more. And it's not that there's more birds. It's just that there's less people noise drowning it out.
Yeah. Noise pollution is a big problem for birds because bird song is not just a fun thing they do. It's to help locate each other and help them mate. So with a lot of noise pollution, it makes it harder for birds to mate during mating seasons. And so with that reduction in noise pollution, they are able to like be like, hey, come get this. Come get this. Come get some of this. And, you know, they'll be able to be heard and there won't be car noises.
The come get this is a pickup line, right? Like it's a let's make some eggs happen.
Yeah. Like their songs are essentially Netflix and chill or whatever the kids say to each other these days to date each other, you know. Dabs and hang out. I don't know what it is anymore. I've been out of the dating scene for a while.
And like you say, birdsong is so important to them being functioning members of bird society and communicating the way they need to communicate. It's not just fooling around for our benefit. Yeah.
Right.
We also got a story here from NPR where there's a sensory ecologist, which is an awesome job title, named Megan Gall at Vassar College, who says that noise from people has been shown to increase stress hormone responses in birds, and that affects their immune function. And then also they have to spend a lot of energy trying to outsing our cars and trucks and stuff.
Yeah.
And there's a lot less of that particular human noise going on. And so in one specific way, birds are like, finally, I can speak at a normal volume. I don't feel like I'm at a concert trying to tell my friend something.
Yeah. I'm just like imagining this bird rubbing its temples with its wings, its stress going up as it's hearing humans talk. It's just like, I cannot deal with these goddamn humans talking about their goddamn stocks and bonds and coffee and computers. It's maddening.
Like the bird's got one of those Alka-Seltzer tablets, but it drops it into an entire bird bath. Like the whole thing goes, you know?
Yeah, we've been annoying the birds. How's that make everyone feel? We've been annoying them.
Yeah. Yeah, we're frustrating.
Oh, you're sorry that a bird woke you up early with its beautiful come have sex with me song? Well, we've been annoying them for, you know, with our cars and all our noise for decades. So how about them apples, huh?
Yeah, we did the entire 20th century to them. They can get a few weeks where they win. It's fine.
Exactly.
There's also another story here that's kind of similar where, and this is a noise I think even less about, but there is a lot of man-made ocean noise.
Yes.
And so human ships with their giant propellers, when you think about it, you realize, oh, that's loud, and the sound waves are going into the ocean kind of all the time. And this means since there's less ship traffic because less travel and less stuff going around, whales are less stressed out.
Whales will use, you know, whale song, as do a lot of cetaceans. Like dolphins use their clicks and buzzes, and they have these, like, their brains are really focused on this auditory perception. And, you know, whales will communicate over long distances with these whale songs and again, similar to the birds, where it's like not having as much noise, it's like basically finally a clear palate for them to communicate with each other. And it's like less stressful for them because it's like a lot of their, you know, processing is like, you know, audio processing where they're visualizing their world through audio. And so when you have all this boat traffic, it's just like this big, big, messy thing going on, big, stressful, messy thing. And then like when that's cleared up, it's like, oh, I can talk to my neighbor and like not have all of this like crazy noise interrupting and also threatening me because boats aren't great for me if I run into one.
Yeah, even just the physical irritation of like a cruise ship going through, right. They don't have to deal with it.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Which again, it's like, you know, we can reduce boat traffic and consumption without the threat of a deadly pandemic if we really set our minds to it, I think. You know, it does show that we can actually have a dramatic positive impact on the environment, and that's good. We just have to be able to apply that at times, because again, like even if the pandemic was unilaterally good for the environment, which obviously it's not, but even if it was, it's like it's gonna end, luckily, and life will maybe go back to normal. And so if we don't think about this in terms of like, well, what long-term changes could we make, positive changes that have a positive impact on the environment, like once we're done with this terrible time, then, you know, it's like, let's be constructive about it. Let's talk about like, hey, look, we can change boat traffic, and that, you know, is really good for our whale populations, and that's great. You know, it's not a like saying like we're the virus and nature hit the reset button. That's just so like, it's so cynical and like nihilistic. It's like instead of like, hey, look, we actually can have this really positive impact. That's great. Let's do it. Once things get back to normal, we can do this. Like, this is something we can do.
Yeah, I feel like that's such a killer takeaway for this whole thing, right? That like animals always need our help, whether or not there's a pandemic going on. And also stop making up memes where there's some kind of security blanket for us, where we're like, oh, at least there's alligators in the Washington Mall again, or whatever it would be. I don't know.
My like, toilet it's not going is full on. Of goldfish. Nature is returning. Yeah, stop lying to me on the internet. Is that too much to ask? Really? Is it?
Folks, that is the episode for this week. My thanks to Katie Golden for, you know, making this kind of thing so enjoyable and so fun to do, and taking the time from her own home to, you know, beam into mine and make this episode possible. In our footnotes, you will find a slew of sources we drew on. There's not really anything from the crack.com site, but there is stuff from The Guardian and Snopes and National Geographic in particular. Also, when we were talking about boars before, I'm glad Katie brought in David Bell's name. David Christopher Bell is an amazing writer, and he and Cody Johnston and the rest of the Some News team have put together a pretty fun video about the idea that boars are teleporting in and out of our midst. And obviously they are not doing that, but also it makes as much sense as what the boars are doing. So you be the judge. And once again, please check out the Creature Feature podcast. It's just fantastic. They have found some really fun and interesting things to do with the animal news of the world as all this has been going on. And I'm a big, big fan. Also, they worked in some Animal Crossing stuff. That's a game you guys like, right? You know, turnips? Yeah, that's a thing you're selling and buying. Anyway, search for Creature Feature in your podcast app. And beyond all that, our theme music is Chicago Falcon by the Budos Band. This episode was engineered by me in Durham, North Carolina, and Katie Golden in California. She's out California way. Then it was edited by Chris Souza in another portion of the United States. Who can say? If you love this episode, that's great. If you hated it, let me know about it on social media. That's right, social media. A space we spent like a lot of the episode debunking, in particular because the actual facts of animals that you can get on the Creature Feature podcast and elsewhere, the actual facts are way better. They're like already really good. You don't need to invent some sort of drunken frat house caper done by elephants. Just elephants are great. My own Twitter account, where I should feature elephants more, is at Alex Schmitty. My Instagram is at Alex Schmitstagram, and I'm on the wider internet at my website, alexschmitty.com. And I'm here to say we will be back next week with more Cracked Podcast. So how about that? Talk to you then.